support from Radio Maria, featuring an international brunch, lunch, and dinner menu influenced by Caribbean, Asian, Indian, Spanish, and Latin cuisines. Radio Maria in downtown Champaign, a restaurant of unusual sensibilities. Programming on WILL is made possible in part by Krannert Center for the Performing Arts, where you'll find five evenings of great jazz with Krakatau, trumpeter John Faddis, and Chip McNeil's U of I Summer Jazz Band from June 9th through 13th. For more information, visit KrannertCenter.com.
Good morning and welcome back to the second hour of Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge, and we are glad to have you with us. The producers for the show, Harriet Williamson, Travis Stansel, Jason Croft, is at the controls this morning. In this part of the show, we'll be talking about the Alexander technique. And it may be that some of the folks who are listening are familiar with the technique. We will try and talk about it in some depth, but just as a general kind of a statement to show you how much I understand it. The idea basically is people who practice the Alexander technique believe that the way that we use our bodies, the way that we move, can sometimes be the root of a lot of stress and chronic pain. And that by working with people, looking at how they move and use their bodies, helping them to move properly, not only can you relieve, in some cases for people, relieve pain, but also enhance their performance. And it is very popular. The Alexander technique is very popular among people who use their bodies in their work. So here we're talking about actors, singers, athletes. And we have with us this morning two guests in the studio that are both teachers of the technique, one who works with swimmers and the other who works with singers and actors, people who use their voice. They are both here in Champaign-Urbana to take part in the 2004 annual general meeting of the American Society for the Alexander Technique. And this conference here is sponsored on the U of I campus by the U of I Department of Dance. Stephen Shaw is an Alexander swimming instructor. He makes his home in London and has authored a book that's titled The Art of Swimming, A New Direction Using the Alexander Technique. So if you're interested in that, you can seek it out. It is published by a British publisher. Ashgrove is the name of the publisher. Also, we have with us Jane Heirich, who is an emeritus professor at University of Michigan, and she has for a long time been a voice instructor, working with both actors, people who use their voice in speaking that way, and also people who sing. She is the author of a book that is coming out soon that's titled Voice and the Alexander Technique, and that will be published by the Mornum Time Press, which is a publisher that has published a lot of different books and things that have to do with the Alexander Technique. So as we talk, questions are welcome. The number here in Champaign-Urbana is 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line that's good anywhere you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. So at any point here, if you have questions, I know our guests will do their best to give you an answer. Thank you very much for being here, both of you.
Thank you.
Let's start talk basically, because I'm sure that there will probably be some people who are listening who have no idea what the Alexander technique is, may not even have heard of it. Going beyond the very basic kind of explanation that I gave, what would you like people to know?
The Alexander technique was developed by a man called Frederick Matthias Alexander, who was an Australian who was an actor. And he developed vocal problems. The problem that he had is every time that he came to speak in a performance, he tended to lose his voice. And basically, over a series of years, he investigated why he had the problem, found that it was to do with the way that he reacted to the problems of stress and pressure. And that reaction caused him to pull his head back, suck in air, and shorten his stature. And basically, Alexander developed a technique and a way of helping himself, and through helping himself, he developed techniques and ways of helping other people.
Yeah. I guess, sort of as I understand it and a little bit I've read about it, if people think about the fact, think about what would happen if you blew up a sack with air and you snuck up behind somebody and you popped that. The kind of the physical response people are going to get, they're going to do this thing, and maybe that's our inbred response
to classic,
getting ready to run away
or
whatever.
It's a classic startle response of that kind of contraction.
And so what he, as I understand the story, was that he had this problem that he was losing his voice, and, and because he used his voice professionally, he was very concerned about that. And he started to actually literally look at himself in the mirror and see how he was holding his body, and would realize, Well, see, now he could see what he was doing and had this idea that he, but by because of the way he was scrunching himself mm-hmm. up,
good word,
it was counterproductive and leading to those sorts of problems. And mm-hmm. and he no doubt thought, well, if I can analyze that misuse of my posture and my body and take care of those problems, the problem that he was having with his voice apparently would resolve. And that is indeed what happened.
And he was starting out. This was really days, months, weeks, years of sorting out his own problems. And he assumed, like everybody else, that there are the physical problems and there are the mental problems. And he was thinking that the mind and the body are separate. And that if he could just figure out what he was, you know, what was going on with himself, then he could fix it by figuring out how to do the right thing. And eventually he came to see that he couldn't find any dividing line between what we call the mind and the body, that he saw the unity of the whole creature. And he also realized, this to me is the most profound and I think most difficult thing to become aware of, it wasn't that he needed to learn to fix the problem by doing something. He needed to learn to not do what was creating the problem. It's much harder to undo or to not do whatever the habit is that has gotten us into the pickle we've gotten into, because these things can be pretty subtle.
Yeah.
And so learning to not do that which was creating the counterproductive operations, learning to not do that allowed him then to find a better pathway, a new way, or he often said, if we quit doing the wrong thing, the right thing will happen. And that's very difficult to accept, that we can't fix it up by doing something right. We have to quit doing what we're doing before we can operate better.
So no doubt he had this idea that there was a, I don't know if natural is the right word to use, but something
yeah,
like that. There was a natural way of moving and using the body
yeah.
and one that was not, and that the pain and the stress and the difficulties had come from not using the natural, not moving in the natural way, and that if you could then get people back to what would be the more natural way. And I think for him, looking at children was a way of thinking about mm-hmm. how people would move before they learned all the bad habits, that if you could get people back to that, then they would be healthier, and that then also there would be a relation, not only relationship between physically how you felt, but how you felt in all other ways too.
Yeah. It's really about becoming, first of all, aware of what you're doing, because until you're aware of your patterns of use, how you move your body, it's very difficult for you to begin to change them. So that process for people can take quite a long time. People often come to Alexander technique teachers for back problems, and they're looking for kind of instant response.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But actually, these are very complicated. The way that you sit, the way that you move, the way that your body functions is very much from childhood. And so to begin to change that takes a certain amount of time and commitment. If people mm-hmm. committed, they can make incredible changes. I've worked with people that have had severe back problems, and within 5 or 6 months, their condition after seeing chiropractors and doctors has changed tremendously, and other areas of their life have changed. But it really is a commitment. It's not a quick fix.
Yeah, I think the other thing that's interesting Professor Heirich, you touched on it, was this idea that he did have about connections between mind and body, and that he was talking about this. It's not that no one else was talking about it, but I don't think that there was quite the same level of acceptance of that idea that we're coming to now at the time when he was doing this.
This is the 1880s, 1890s in Australia, and it wasn't that he saw a connection between the mind and the body. He saw you couldn't draw a line. He saw the unity of the whole system. Mm-hmm. And this has been known for thousands of years in Eastern philosophies, but it's now, I find it amusing to read general journal articles, news articles, that we're suddenly discovering that the mind can talk to the body and the body can talk to the mind. And, oh, look at this integration. But he was finding it out not theoretically, but it was from his own work on himself.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe I'd like to just interject to broaden our definition of the Alexander work to what he found that he was working with his habits of thinking and his habits of movement. Not just habits of movement, not just how we use our bodies, so that we're working with people to help them access, well, ourselves, mm-hmm. and help our students access what their patterns of their habits of thinking are, as well as their habits of use of their whole self in their activities. So it's much more than just how I sit, how I stand, how I walk, how I sit at the computer, how I ride my bicycle, how I do all the things that I do, chop carrots, weed the garden, shovel the snow, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. All those things, are we do work with them and we do look at that, but it's what are my habits of thinking? How do I respond to every stimulus that comes at me in my waking moments? And that's a huge order to become aware of that.
And that's where I think for me, that's where it gets a little bit more difficult for me to understand. And also, if you, it's easy to, in a few sentences, say something like I did at the introduction, where I'd say, well, what this is about is movement. It's mm-hmm. about use, misuse of the body. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. people who do the technique, what they're trying to do is look at people, mm-hmm. how they're moving, and saying, no, sort of do it this way. And that afterwards people say, oh, that's, you know, eventually with enough work and perseverance and dedication that they say, well, I actually feel better, and mm-hmm. but there's
that's
a much
true.
Deeper
and
while
true.
It's all true, there's this deeper level that almost gets to sound kind of mystical that I'm not sure I quite understand. Now you see you're shaking
it's
your head
very
saying,
practical,
yeah,
no, no. very practical. Yeah, okay. If somebody is furious with you, how do you respond? Your whole system responds. Mm-hmm. We stiffen the neck. We hold the breath. I mean, I don't know what your patterns are. But we react, yeah. and when we react, those kinds of reactions affect all the tissues throughout the whole system. So it's a total creature that reacts to somebody shouting at them, somebody cutting them off in traffic, or sitting at the computer and you hear my voice change. I'm sitting here and slumping at the computer. You know, it doesn't matter what the activity is or what the stimulus is. We have a total system reaction. That's really what I was trying to say.
Yeah. Let me introduce again the two guests for this morning. Stephen Shaw, he is an Alexander swimming instructor. That is, he works with swimmers and applies the Alexander technique to swimming. And also Jane Heirich, she has for a long time and continues to work with voice. People use their voices, actors, singers. They're both here in Champaign-Urbana for a meeting. This is the 2004 annual general meeting of the American Society for the Alexander Technique. Now, I know that there is a workshop, a swimming workshop, that is open to the public, that I know that Stephen would like to mention, or at least would like to make sure that people know about. And this is tomorrow, right, on the U of I campus?
Yeah, it's tomorrow. And you can phone Gretchner on 344-1224 if you want to receive more information about it. And it's okay. at the Kenny Gym right. from 9 o'clock in the morning.
And there is a fairly substantial charge, so people should keep that in mind. There is a charge to participate. It's not free. But again, 344-1224. If you ask for Gretchen, you can get the more information on the Art of Swimming Public Workshop. And then for people who are interested in investigating the Alexander technique, I know from having done it, there is if you have access to the Internet, there is lots of information. There are a lot of websites where you can do basic background reading. And then from there, there are many books and things. What kind of benefit can you get from trying to do this for yourself? Is this really something that can you Alexander yourself, or do you really need to go to an Alexander teacher?
Excellent question. Yes. Because the Alexander lessons are a lesson in learning self-observation so that we can see how we're organizing our self as we do our daily mundane tasks. Mm-hmm. And it's teaching skills of self-awareness, teaching skills of learning how to not do the old habit, teaching skills of finding better ways. So as an Alexander teacher, we really want to work ourselves out of jobs. I mean, it's teaching, it's not therapy. There may be therapeutic benefits, but we really want to teach the skills to the student so the student can begin to function better in their daily life. However, I'm sure you have the same experience. Some students, this is their weekly gift to themselves to come for a long period of time. So Alexander student can take as many lessons as they want to, depending on what kind of issues they're working on, or just to, because there's always more that we can learn. And those of us who are Alexander teachers, we keep studying with other teachers, keep exchanging work with other teachers, because we never get to the end of the road. There's no end to the road.
Alexander himself, actually, I mean, what needs to be remembered is that he developed the technique by himself, for himself, so it grew out of his own personal experience. So obviously it's something that you can develop in yourself. But what Alexander said is that having a teacher will make the road shorter. I mean, yeah. If you've got a teacher and someone who's trained and professional, and to be an Alexander teacher, you have a 3-year training, which is 5 days a week, usually in most places, full time, and you're learning keen skills of observation and you can guide people. So there are professionals that will make the road much easier.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm sure that it is the case that an individual can look at himself or herself. You can do what Alexander did. You could look at yourself in the mirror, but it's not quite going to be the same as another person removed from you physically, mm-hmm. looking at you and the way that you're moving. So I'm mm-hmm. sure that there's an advantage to be gained in actually having a teacher.
Well, Alexander said, you can do what I did if you'll do what I did, mm-hmm. but if you work with a teacher, it won't take you 10 years.
Mm. Can I just say something?
Yes.
Also, what Alexander developed, which, I mean, some people may not understand, is that he developed a very sophisticated series of ways of guiding movements. So in an Alexander lesson, what you get is you go through a series of movements, it may be sitting, standing, walking, with the teacher actually putting light contact, physical contact with you, and that experience really helps people notice what's going on with their body. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you just read a book and lay down by yourself, it's more difficult to get mm-hmm. that experience.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Do you, the people that you work with, Stephen, are these mostly serious competitive swimmers?
No, I work with everyone. I mean, you kind of introduced me as an Alexander swimming teacher. I would say to myself, I'm an Alexander teacher that works in the water. So I teach people to have a better relationship with the water. And the people that I work with vary from people that have never swum, never put their face in the water, have fear responses to that, to people that swim the British Channel. Great. So at every level of work. And basically, in my opinion, the water is a perfect place to work on the Alexander technique because it makes you more aware of what you're doing. Mm. If you have a tendency, for example, a lot of people have, to put their head on one side, and you look at photographs of yourself and you see your head's on one side, it may take several years and several visits to the chiropractor before you begin to even become to notice that. But if you swim with your head on one side, you swim into the lane rope or the wall, you immediately get useful feedback about what's going on. It heightens your awareness. And the first stage in Alexander technique is to be more aware. So the water's a great place to do that. Mm.
And Jane, as I mentioned, you are a voice teacher.
Uh-huh.
So do most of the people that you work with, are they people who one way or another use their voices professionally, singers, actors, people like that?
I'll say the same thing that Stephen did. I'm an Alexander teacher. I'm also a voice teacher. I work with those who have been called tone deaf by other people. I work with opera singers. I work with all kinds of singers, performers, actors. But I work with a lot of people with bad backs. A lot of people with carpal tunnel, with problems from sitting at the computer all day. So I'm an Alexander teacher who works with a wide variety of human beings, and I would say everybody's a voice user because they are, we all speak. I worked with square dance callers. I worked with an auctioneer. I work with college professors who have voice loss problems. So it doesn't matter. We all can make better use of our voices, and yes, I do work with some professional jazz singers, professional folk singers, professional rock singers, one heavy metal singer. So a lot of people do work vocally and Alexanderly both with me, sometimes I'm just the Alexander teacher for a professional singer who has another life, another mm-hmm. voice teacher. So it's a mix.
Well, we have some callers who have questions, so we will not make them wait any longer. We'll start in with the first in Coles County and on our toll-free line, line 4. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
I'm wondering if there are any general techniques or tenets that people can do as far as the Alexander technique, or is it strictly something that has to be kind of tailored on an individual case-by-case basis? And I'll hang up and listen. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Um, everybody's different. I mean, the Alexander technique, if you go for an Alexander technique lesson, it's something, what the beauty of it is, it's something that can be specific to your own use and your own situation. So we are all different. But there are certain common things that people do, certain automatic responses that we tend to have. And the main one is that, that Alexander observed, is that we pull our heads back when we go through movement, when we go to do anything. And anyone can start becoming aware and start monitoring that behavior. So that's something that's general. The other thing that we always recommend people do when they start doing Alexander work is to put like a telephone book, or like a yellow pages we have in the UK, under your head. Lay down, put your feet on the floor in what we call the semi-supine position. So your feet are on the floor and your knees are up. And you think about the directions, which is lengthening and widening the back and releasing tension. And just that experience of doing it on a regular basis, you'll notice changes.
Anything you'd want to add?
I would add another fairly common pattern is holding the breath. That when people focus, pay attention, they hold the breath. We hold the breath. Human beings do. Learning to be aware of how of these fairly common habits can, just by a conversation with somebody can start down this path of learning better self-awareness. But it is an individually tailored lesson, one-to-one, hands-on, because each human being's, I say, is a different package of genetics and lifetime habits.
Well, when you meet, if someone comes in to work with you, when you meet them for the very first time, what do you do? Do you do some assessment and you do it the same way with everybody? Do you say to them, why are you here? What are your problems? How do you start?
Different teachers have different ways of beginning. I mean, some teachers will have go through a whole questionnaire, and so they'll want to know about background, they want to know about injuries, they want to know about the whole case history. And other teachers, you'll go in and they'll set to work and they'll say, all right, we can observe right now what's going on with you. Alexander said, when I see a person get in and out of the chair, he said, I have their whole life before me. Mm-hmm. So he could perceive mm-hmm. that. So when you train as an Alexander technique teacher, they don't say, this is the way that mm-hmm. you conduct a lesson. And you'll see different techniques and different styles of doing it. But basically, in the first lesson, your objective is to get to know that person as an individual.
Mm-hmm. I often ask those kinds of questions that you mentioned we chatter back and forth on email or a telephone interview in setting up a first lesson. So I know a little bit about that person before they walk in the door. But the minute they walk in the door, I watch how they walk, I observe how they walk and how they put down their stuff and how they, and I invite them to sit down in a chair and we're going to chat a little bit. So I'm watching them in their movement activities.
I would, just thinking for myself, I would think that if I was, when I would walk in the room, if I was coming to see you, I would be so self-conscious of the way that I was moving because I'm thinking, oh, they're checking out everything
I'm
doing.
Well, they don't know that. Usually they're not aware of that. You know? I'm just telling you.
Oh, I see. Well, we won't tell anybody else. I guess I would assume that. I mean, I would expect that the very first thing that you would do was come in the door. You would look at the way that I was mm-hmm. moving from the very beginning. That you could almost not help doing that.
Right.
I think that's true. But I think the art of a good Alexander teacher is that they'll make the person feel comfortable uh-huh. pretty soon. So you may walk in and feel for the first 5 minutes very self-conscious, but the job of the teacher is to make you feel at ease, feel comfortable, mm-hmm. and doesn't induce your fear responses.
Yeah.
But one of the really interesting things is when you work with people, you have people for the first lesson and they come out and they feel taller and freer, and they come back for the second lesson and they're standing as stiff as a board and they say, am I doing it right
yes,
now?
Yes, yes, yes.
You get that. And Alexander actually said is the biggest impediment to learning the technique is trying to get it right. Because it's a technique is about learning to undo tension, and suddenly you feel that your back starts to move more. But if you try and hold on to that, you actually can make the situation worse.
Well, do people get to the point where they're doing, I was about to say doing the right things, where they're not doing the wrong things anymore mm-hmm. and doing that without thinking about it. Mm-hmm. And you can mm-hmm. get to the point where they're mm-hmm. not constantly being aware of how they're moving mm-hmm. and how they're holding themselves, but they just go about their life and do mm-hmm. their thing.
Mm-hmm. That's the intention.
Yeah. I think that they think about it, but thinking about it is a kind of, instead of being a foreground thought, it's in the background. Good. So that's like underlying, there's an awareness that's going through that the way that I sit, the way that I move, the way it's just a nice thought in the background, but it's not, I'm not consciously worried about it.
And it can happen in fairly quick time. I've been surprised several times in the last few years. The Alexander work's been part of a basic voice technique class that I've taught at the university. And there'll always be some tall, gangly guys slumping down to talk to the rest of the world. And it doesn't do too much good for their backs or for their voice use. And this is a voice class. And before the end of the term, now we're talking 12 weeks, we're talking like 12 Alexander lessons, one each week, they can't slump anymore. They can't, they're not comfortable slumping. And they really can't do what they were doing because it hurts now to do what they used to do. And they're young, so they may be changing more quickly than some of the rest of us might.
Can I say one more thing? Sure. In terms of swimming, it's also very interesting that people come in to me often at the beginning swimming classically in the UK with the head out of the water, doing the breaststroke, pulling the head back. And then we work with them about releasing the head and moving more freely in the water. And then I ask them to show me what they did before. And they can't remember what they did before even. Or if they did do it, they really wouldn't want to do it anymore. But it's amazing. Within a really short space of time, they've almost forgotten what the habit was, even though they might have had it for most of their life.
Well, we have some other callers here. I want to make sure I bring them into the conversation. Our guests, Stephen Shaw, Jane Heirick, they're both teachers of the Alexander Technique. And as they explained, they like to think of themselves first as Alexander Technique teachers, Alexander teachers. And then next to that, Stephen says, well, he works with people in the water, and Jane works with the voice and continues to be a vocal coach working with singers and actors and people like that. They're both here visiting in Champaign-Urbana for the annual general meeting of the American Society for the Alexander Technique. It's taking place here on the U of I campus, and it's sponsored by the U of I Department of Dance. And I do want to mention just real quick one more time that Stephen will be doing a public workshop on the art of swimming. This is tomorrow from 9 to 4. There is a fee, $100. It's at the Kenny Gym Pool on the U of I campus. And if you're interested, you'd like more information, or you'd like to reserve a space, call Gretchen. And the number is 344-1224. Now, we have several people who are waiting patiently. We'll get to them. And Champagne is next, line one.
Yeah, hello. I was wondering about habits that develop over a lifetime. You were saying that some young guys learn to stand up straight rather quickly, but I was thinking that if you develop a certain habit of holding yourself in a particular way over a lifetime, your osteoporosis might develop and hold you in a certain position, and I'm wondering if it's harder to change those kind of habits because it would get beyond, you know, the volition of deciding not to do a certain thing or you know, rejecting a habit or not doing something, that it would seem as if, I mean, for example, in yoga, over a period of time, one might actually change the structure of the skeletal system. How does Alexander Technique work with people who may be bent over and almost, you know, unable to straighten up because of their bones having been shaped that way?
Yeah.
That's a wonderful question. Alexander said that his work was about helping us make the best possible use of ourselves, no matter what we do with our lives, not about making us perfect. And he worked with polio people around the turn of the last century. He worked with people with a variety of conditions. So whatever the conditions are, we can use ourselves well or we can use ourselves badly. But by learning to be aware of how we do what we do and how we respond to everything we respond to, it does act. Our changing our function does actually change the structure if it is still malleable. And many times it's far more malleable than we think it is.
Mm-hmm.
And but it's a very, very good question. I have a lot of respect for people who've lived hard lives, worked hard, and who may have a lot of arthritis. Women may have osteoporosis. I worked with a lot of people in their later years. And I worked with my father when he was in his 80s and early 90s. And he was quite bent over, quite stooped. And after he would come and have lessons for a month with me, or when he would come down and visit me here at Urbana when I was in the training course, he'd look 10 years younger. So his mind was willing to change. His mind was eager to change. So if someone wants to change, wants to make better use of themselves, we don't know what can happen, but it's never too late. I really learned that from my father. It's never too late to think about how we do what we do and to function better. So changing the function does change the structure, can change the structure.
Okay, well, thanks a lot.
All right, thank you. Next caller is in Spring Bay, line two. Hello.
Good morning. I'll start with a big generalization here, which you may or may not agree with, but it seems like Western dance is real sort of chest-shoulders oriented, and posture maybe going along with that as well. And in Asia, it's very much sort of the stomach and the lower hips and the floor oriented. So I'm asking, I guess, do you see any sort of cultural predispositions or outcomes based on cultural differences, maybe in the West being more elevated, chest-oriented, and in Asia more centered towards the hips? And I'll hang up and listen to your answer. Thank you.
Okay. I think Stephen wants to
talk
about that.
Yeah, I think, I've worked internationally in lots of different countries, and I've worked in Tokyo, which was a very interesting experience. I worked with 100 swimming teachers and swimming coaches, and I was staggered, actually, by not only their awareness of their body, but just the stillness and ability to receive information in a way that I hadn't come across. And their alignment was quite different from what I'd experienced in the UK. I do think that... I don't think it's just shoulders back and forward in terms of different cultures. I just think that some cultures, as part of their education, are taught to be more aware of what they're doing while they're doing it. And I think the more stressed we become, the more we lose control and awareness of ourselves. I was very fortunate to have lessons with a teacher called Margaret Goldie, who worked with Alexander, and she had lessons with him for many, many years. And she died at the age of 92. And she said of her years of teaching, over a period of teaching of about 60 years she was teaching, that with every decade that she worked with pupils, the quality of their youth got worse. So when she worked with people in the 1940s, the average in the UK, their average ability to stand up straight or be aware of what they were doing was quite good. But when she worked with people in the 90s, their ability had actually gone down. So it's quite interesting when we think of ourselves as constantly developing and getting better and getting... Her experience was that the average youth and the average ability to pay attention to instruction and be mindful of the moment had got worse. And the two things that really she found couldn't understand, which I think is really interesting, she couldn't understand how people could chew gum. She said she just couldn't understand what it was for. She'd go on the chew. And the other thing that she found really strange was she couldn't understand the Walkman. She'd see that people would turn on this machine that was very alien because she was from a different era. And she'd see them vanish inside of themselves and be not aware of what they're doing. Mm. And in the UK, there's quite a campaign now because there's a number of teenagers being killed by walking out onto the streets listening to Walkmans. There's a kind of campaign in London because their mind is completely elsewhere and they're walking out into the street listening to whatever they're listening to and not being connected. Mm. So I think it's cultural, but it's also historical as well.
I wonder. I'm fascinated by the notion that that people's posture should have declined in quality over time, and I wonder what you think might account for that. Did she have an idea?
Yeah,
why
she thinks it's overload of information. It's too much things happening too quickly all the time that stops people being aware of what's going on from moment to moment. Everything's trying to be. You know, we're living in a world which is faster, quicker, more pressure.
Noisier.
Less ability just to think and be still and be connected to what's going on.
Well, that makes sense.
I just had a quick response to that interesting question. I work with people from a variety of cultures, too, and both traveling and at the University of Michigan, there are many students from many different parts of the world. And it's always very interesting in the Alexander part of the voice class to see what comes up in terms of movement patterns. Some cultures hold the pelvis very tightly. Others move very freely in the pelvis. Some cultures are very modest and the head is slightly bowed down walking across campus. And other people are striding with the head up. And these things come from families, from cultures, from other parts of the world. So those who sit on stools and benches as children in their educational system have very strong backs because they're not slouching into a soft chair. So the educational system and the family organization and the cultural expectations, all of these things impact us as to how we move as human beings and how we think about moving as human beings.
Let's talk with someone else in Urbana, line number 3. Hello.
Yeah, it seems to me that the Alexander technique incorporates aspect of cognitive behavior therapy. Is that true? Or based on your previous discussion about the idea of the emotions, is that a perspective or not?
I'd say, Alexander technique is a lesson. It's not a therapy, but it uses... Alexander wasn't a cognitive therapist, but it uses certain things that cognitive therapists would use.
Mm-hmm. Would it seem to me, too, that it also would help in terms of behavioral problems to a certain degree, wouldn't it? Or?
Definitely it would help. I mean, it's all about the way that we respond. Often we respond automatically, unconsciously, to a variety of different responses. So what the Alexander technique teaches you to do is stop and think before you respond. And that's a very, very powerful tool. Mm-hmm. In the technique, we call that inhibiting the automatic response. And it can be very liberating and give you an opportunity to think about and not do what you're used to doing.
There's been some recent discussion on NPR about Ellis's, in terms of the rational emotive behavior therapy. But this whole... in therapy now, there's a trend toward using more of a cognitive basis. But it's sort of interesting, again, that back in the time when this was developed, that this was a component. You know, the cognitive behavior was part of the technique or, part of the... The other one that I have a question about is the relationship to Tai Chi and also yoga. It would seem that it incorporates some of those aspects too, right?
I think we probably both work with people who are yoga addicts and Aikido addicts and Tai Chi addicts. And the Alexander work is to be taken into all moments of our life. We could take it into our aerobics class. The yoga class goes better if we apply our Alexander thinking to how we're doing whatever we're doing in a yoga class. Mm-hmm. So the Alexander work has, by somebody, been called an Ur technique. In other words, it goes everywhere.
Mm-hmm. The Alexander technique is very much... grows out of the West, and it's something you need to sit down and go to a yoga class or a Tai Chi class, but Alexander can be applied every moment in whatever situation you're doing, whether you're driving, whether you're moving. It's not an exercise, it's a system that you can work with all the time.
It's a way of thinking about however you do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, actually in yoga you tend to think about in the class being mindful, but
that's right.
In terms of meditation, though, it tries to instill where you're living more in the moment.
Yeah.
And your reaction in terms of stress, breathing, and all that kind of stuff. But this is very much of a holistic approach mm-hmm. in terms of the Alexander technique, which I hadn't realized before.
Yeah, it's learning skills to live in the moment, all of our waking moments.
Excellent discussion.
All right. Well, thank you for the call. Let's continue. We have someone here in Champaign. Line 1. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
My question relates to working through injuries. I practice martial arts very seriously for a long time and a very conscious moment to moment, I think, of my posture. At some point, I have had inflammation problems, serious problems with my knees. And I found that not only did it affect my physical day-to-day movements, not only in practice but just every moment. But as it progressed for a period of time, I found it affecting my mentality and basically depressing me, sort of, because I couldn't do athletic things, but because I could feel I was doing things wrong. But my knees kept me from being able immediately to correct it. Luckily, I gave it a good rest, and I'm not in that condition now. But I wondered, it made me start thinking about how one would maintain his mentality, say, if you grow older and these kinds of distracting injuries become permanent conditions.
There's a strong correlation, obviously, between feeling off sorts in all sorts of ways and physically and feeling emotionally. And I think people that have come from a sport background, I was a competitive swimmer, and when I developed problems in my shoulder, for example, it affected me profoundly. It affected how I studied at school. It affected lots of things, even though, you know, it was a problem that related to specifically to swimming. I think this connection is very, very strong and profound, how we feel about our bodies and how we think and move.
I would agree. Musicians who are in pain can become very depressed if they can't do their thing, which may be playing the cello. So it's a real issue. But working one's way out of an injury, whether it's your knees or whether it's your wrists or whether it's the shoulder, is not just a matter of rest. So I assume you work with people who've all kinds of injuries, as I do. It's about learning to not do what we have been doing. So it's learning to be aware and learning to undo the patterns of thinking, the patterns of movement that helped create the problem. The tissues do need time to heal, but we can learn to operate better in the meantime while they're healing. So a singer, for example, who has vocal nodules, these are calluses on the vocal cords from too much, too loud, too high, too long, whatever, can learn to rehabilitate the voice. If they just be quiet, what are they going to do? Go back to the same thing. So they need to learn to not do the habits that have caused the problems.
I think an injury can be not just a negative thing. It can be depressing, but you can view it as an opportunity to learn about what you're doing. A lot of people pull their heads back and strain their back, and it's not till it's very, very late that they're aware that they've actually developed a problem. If you're in the martial arts, you probably have a heightened sense of awareness, and the fact that you notice what's going on is a real opportunity to revisit the way that you practice and think about your body. So I think it can be a positive thing if you work with it in a positive way.
Mm-hmm.
Can I ask a follow-up, more specific question then?
Sure.
As an example?
Sure.
Let's say that, just not in any martial arts setting, but just day-to-day, if I have to pick up a heavy object from close to the ground, obviously we know we should remain upright and do that lifting with our legs and so forth. I found in the course of time, while my knees were really bothering me, I couldn't, without pain, perform that simple motion in a normal way that I know is right. I almost had to bend more from the waist and so forth because my knees wouldn't, without pretty distracting pain, operate the way I believe they normally would. I started to think, if cartilage problems became more ongoing and I was literally unable to physically correct that situation, that I can live with. But psychologically, does Alexander Technique suggest ways to deal with the mental side of performing simple motions in ways that we know are not the way we think we should be doing them? Does that make sense?
It makes sense. Can I go back to the first part of your question?
Sure.
And I will try to be very succinct here. I think it's too limited to view proper picking up as being just the legs. I've had, I think, one particular student with 6 years of back problems who came for Alexander lessons having added knee problems to his back problems because he followed the advice just that you were talking about of being vertical and going down to the floor using primarily a lot of knee work. And he learned to get out of his back issues. The knee problems became a non-problem by learning to use the back and the legs in an integrated way so that the whole system is functioning well rather than putting so much work onto the knees. So you're absolutely, you know, on a fairly common track of not being able to do what you thought you should do by using primarily the knees. Hip joints and knees and ankles all help lower us down to the floor to pick something up. So we need to learn how to integrate the whole system.
Does that translate then that when you pick up, say, something, a big bowling ball or a boulder from the ground,
mm-hmm.
that you shouldn't be concerned that your upper body remain more or less upright?
No, it doesn't mean that. It means that you use your body in a more integrated... It's not upright. You see, often people have a concept of being correct, stiff, straight.
Mm-hmm.
Alexander used to say that the Alexander technique isn't about posture, it's about use good direction. So it's about moving in a flexible way when you go to pick something up. It's not about keeping your back straight.
Or even keeping it vertical, though. Yeah, I'm saying it doesn't
changing it, yeah.
It doesn't need to be vertical.
You need to adjust your position according to what you're doing.
And also
depending on what your particular circumstances are.
Right.
I've worked with people that have had really serious knee problems and been able to lift heavy objects. Also, there's been research done with putting stress plates on people's feet when they get in and out of a chair, and by changing the alignment of the head, the way the head's positioned, they use a lot less effort to get out of the chair and therefore a lot less effort on the knees
mm-hmm.
by making adjustment of the atlanto-occipital joint, which is at the top of the spine, which is way away from the knees.
So there is help for knees by learning to use your whole self better.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Let's go to Danville, line two. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
As always, it's a fascinating discussion, one I didn't know anything about. I have a question, and then I'll hang up and listen. I have a family member who's a Rolfist. Are there parallels or similarities between the practice of Rolfing and the Alexander technique? And I'll hang up and listen. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Well, the Rolfing's supposedly about postural reintegration. So on that level, in Alexander, we're concerned about people's alignment and people, and so that on the outside there may be a perception that it's the same thing. But the huge difference between Rolfing or any form of kind of body work, as it's known, and the Alexander technique is the Alexander technique is about undoing. It's not about Rolfing's very physically hard, deep tissue massage, whereas Alexander work is about empowering the person to let go of their own tension and become aware of what they're doing. So superficially, you may see parallels, but on a deeper level, I don't think that there are so much.
I would agree.
All right. We'll go to Champagne, line three. Hello.
Hello?
Yes.
Oh, hi. I also find the conversation interesting. I was just wondering if the guests ever inquire about what the people wear. So, for example,
oh, yes.
I'm wondering, I find lots of people wear tight clothing, awkward shoes, you know, things around their tummies and things like that that might make things very uncomfortable for them over a long period of time. And I was just wondering if that's part of the making people more aware of what they're doing with their body and also putting on to their body so that they can feel more comfortable with what they're doing.
I think it's a wonderful question. And one of the young women in the voice class last fall, voice class, her special project for the term was analyzing the 24 pairs of shoes in her closet. And she did a very good job, brought them all into class and explained why this wasn't any good and this was terrible and this was good, and it was delightful.
Yeah.
I think women are more aware of that than men. I think women are more restricted in their clothing styles than men are. And I think it's a real issue. And I think people do become sensitive to how they restrict their movement.
Right, because if you're wearing something that restricts your movement, at least for me, all day long, I can't stand it.
Yep, good for you.
I have to get home and quickly put my gym clothes on.
Good for you. Then maybe the next time you go shopping, you will think about what you buy.
Right, exactly. Well, and other people complain of tummy aches and things like that, and I say to them, well, you know, maybe you should change that belt or something.
Delightful.
All right, well, thank you very, very much.
Thank you for the call. We are just about at the point where we're going to have to stop because we've used the time. Is there some last thought that you'd like to leave with folks? Obviously, we have just scratched the surface, and there's a lot more that can be said, and if people want to pursue this, there's lots of reading they can do, and of course they can look for an Alexander teacher that they can talk to.
And I would like to say that in the Champaign-Urbana area, from where several callers came, it is the highest concentration of Alexander teachers, certified, fully trained Alexander teachers per population in the world.
Indeed. Why should such a thing be? Who knows? Well, there's certainly, if you live in Champaign-Urbana, there's no shortage of people that you can talk to about the technique. Our guests here this morning, Stephen Shaw, Jane Heirich. Stephen Shaw teaches Alexander Technique and Swimming in London. He is the co-author of the book, The Art of Swimming, A New Direction Using the Alexander Technique.
You can see we've got a website, which is www.artofswimming.com. So if they want more information than that.
All right, very good. Artofswimming.com. And also Jane Heirich, she teaches at University of Michigan. She teaches basic voice technique for singers and actors. She also has private practice where she does vocal teaching using the Alexander Technique. And she is also author of a book that is coming out soon. It's titled Voice and the Alexander Technique. It will be published by the Mornum Time Press. And they're both here for the annual general meeting of the American Society for the Alexander Technique here at the U of I, sponsored by the dance department. Well, thank you both very much.
Thank you, David.
Our program, Focus 580, made possible today in part by a grant from Bodywork Associates. This year, celebrating their 22nd anniversary, Bodywork Associates has been providing professional massage therapy to Champaign-Urbana since 1982. The broadcast is also made possible by a grant from The Great Impasta, serving foods from northern Italy, The Great Impasta at 114 West Church. The staff there at The Impasta encourage you to join them in supporting AM 580. That's it for us. Up next, The Afternoon Magazine. The host, Celeste Quinn.
Thank you, David. Coming up today in the 1 o'clock hour of The Afternoon Magazine, we'll talk with dog trainers Carol Lindholm and Jim Keel. Then later in the program, following the closing market report, we'll talk with humorist David Sedaris. A new collection of his essays, Dress Your Family in Corduroy and Denim, is now arriving in bookstores and libraries. Let's turn our attention now to what's happening on the Chicago Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange. July wheat, 371.5, up 4.25. September, 380.75, up 4.5. July corn, 310.5, down 1/4. September, 310.75, unchanged. December, 312.5, up 2.5. March corn, 316.75, up 3.25. July soybeans, 833.5, changed.